seconds. And yes, call now, 818-985-5735. We have the Ta-Nehisi Coates book, The Message, for a $100 donation. Rolas de Aslan for a $65 donation. 19 tracks, songs of the Chicano movement. Whatever you can do would help. 818-985-5735, extension 2, and let them know you want to pledge for Alternative Radio, and pledge at any amount you can afford. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Gary, and everyone out there, please give us a call right now, 818-985-5735. Thank you.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, globally on kpfk.org.
En una noche de luna, Naila lloraba ante mí.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with Maria Hall, co-host of the show. It's a good one for you today, as usual, we think. Maria, let our audience know what they're in for.
Yes, thanks, Jim. Well, in our first segment, we'll be joined by members of the May Day Coalition, and we'll hear about some of the really fun and exciting activities that will be taking place tomorrow, May 1st. Then in our second segment, we'll speak with award-winning author and civil rights lawyer, Alec Karakatsanis. And on that note, support for the Lawyers Guild Show comes in part from The New Press, presenting Alec's new book. It's called Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News. More information is available at thenewpress.org. And we're grateful to New Press for donating copies of Copaganda to be used as a pledge premium for KPFK, which we'll tell you about a little later in the show.
We will indeed. And this is, of course, we're still in our spring, our fun drive. But as regular listeners know, and if you're a new listener, don't turn away. Don't think, oh, my God, here comes 20 minutes of pitching for my wallet. No, we take only a couple of minutes, really, a few of 5 minutes maybe during the whole show to talk to you about our needs for funds, although given our needs for fund, we could well take the whole hour, but we don't do that because we know the information is so important to you. So stay tuned. You won't have to bear with us too much during those periods of time. May Day, May 1st, it's known around the world, May Day is, International Workers' Day. It's a day for workers and social movements to come together to express our solidarity and to stand together for dignity and justice, you know, for a better future. For some of us, it's a no-brainer to want peace and better health for the planet, for ourselves, a better future for ourselves and generations to come, but not so much for others, because if we truly had justice for all, a few people at the top would no longer be hoarding the power and the money that they hoard, because they couldn't take unfair advantage of other people as they do. And that's a big part of what May 1st, of course, is all about. Well, given which camp holds the bully pulpit right now, this year's May Day is more meaningful, I suspect, than ever. I think it is. Today, we're going to talk about some of the activities planned for tomorrow in L.A. And, well, most importantly, how you can take part. This is not simply a show that somebody wants you to watch later on the news. This is a participatory event. It becomes the powerful events they often are because of you and I showing up at these events. Our guest today includes Sebastian Silva, Communications Coordinator for SEIU United Service Workers West, which represents over 50,000 janitors, security officers, whom I'm missing, airport service workers, and other essential service workers. We also have with us Erica Schwert. Do I pronounce that right, Erica?
Yes, that's correct.
That is. Oh, my goodness. Program Manager and Community Organizer for Strength-Based Communities Change, or SBCC, in the Antelope Valley. SBCC, by the way, organizes communities to help develop systems that lead to self-sustainability and to empowerment. And joining us for the first few minutes is Cynthia Chandler, COO of an Alameda County Bar Association. She's been involved with the National Law Day of Action, which is happening tomorrow. So welcome all of you to the Lawyers Guild Show. And Cynthia, I know your time with us is limited, so let me ask you right off the bat, what is the Law Day of Action and why is it significant?
Sure. So, you know, most of your audience probably is used to the idea of protesting and getting out and pushing for what's right. Many lawyers are not used to that. And I'm not going to try to be Pollyannish and act like we've always had the rule of law or democracy. Obviously, we haven't. We're also seeing those institutions under much more of an attack. And lawyers are playing a really crucial role. And it's an awakening for many of our brothers and sisters in the field of how important it is to actually stand up. And this year, May 1st is historically, for the last decade or so, been the ABA has celebrated a National Law Day to celebrate issues around the Constitution on that day. And this year, there's an organized effort that's national for a National Law Day of Action. And folks can go to a website, lawdayofaction.org, and learn more about it and find out about events near you. But the idea is for lawyers to come together at federal courthouses near where they work across the country at noon local time on May 1st, retake the oath, affirm the importance of defending the Constitution, affirm the importance of the rule of law, and actually stand in solidarity with communities that are being denied their rights. So if you go to lawdayofaction.org, you can see a map. I click on it and see the events. So I know that Los Angeles is hosting one. San Diego is hosting one. Fresno, Sacramento, San Jose, San Francisco, and Oakland, where I'm from. And so it's really impressive how many folks are turning up. And I want to encourage folks to have a moment of rare solidarity with our fellow lawyers.
Yeah. Well, and of course, if ever there was a time when we need solidarity with our lawyers and with law firms, and they need solidarity with each other, too, I might add. It's now because of what Trump is doing with respect to decisions of the court, how he's targeting lawyers and law firms who don't necessarily march to his tune. So all the more important that we'd be out there tomorrow.
Absolutely. I don't know if y'all saw the executive order yesterday where it makes it very clear that those pro bono law hours that law firms are going to be doing are going to be, they're going to be coerced and compelled to doing pro bono services in defense of police who kill people.
Oh my God.
That is spelled out in the executive order that went out yesterday. We need lawyers to have the courage to stand up. And if standing up with those big law firms gets them to have the courage to say no, then I'm willing to be there. So I hope folks join us with this National Day of Action.
Absolutely. Well, Cynthia Chandler, so thank you so much for all the parts that you've played in making this possible and for joining us today and to let our listeners know about it. Hopefully they'll heed your advice.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so very much.
Cynthia.
Bye.
Thanks, Cynthia.
All right. Yes. And here in LA, also judges are taking part. And it's also about one of the themes is also protecting the independence of the judiciary. So Judge Dolly G and Judge Sergio Tapia will both be speaking as well at our Law Day of Action in LA.
And okay, I'm proud to say that Judge Dolly G is a long time member of the National Lawyers Guild.
As all the best people are. But I'm just a little biased, perhaps.
Yes.
So let's get on down with our May Day Coalition organizers. We're so happy to have Sebastian and Erica with us. So let's start with you, Sebastian, from SEIU USWW, one of the organizers of the May Day Coalition and the activities tomorrow. Sebastian, tell us, what is the theme of this year's annual May Day March in downtown LA? And what is the call to action?
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Long-time listener, first-time caller here. This theme for this year, I'm very excited to talk about it. I know that organizations like Erica's, like my union, works very hard to come up with a theme that really meets the moment of where this country is today and has been for the past few months, but also the past few years, because we understand that fighting for workers' rights isn't anything new. It's something that we have to be doing every day, day in and day out. So the official theme of this year's May Day action is One Struggle, One Fight, Workers Unite. What we're calling folks to do is to stand up and fight for your rights, for the rights of your neighbor, for the rights of your coworkers, and for the rights of everyone. Because with our hands, as we say, con nuestras manos, that's how we demonstrate our power, our economic power, our political power. And ultimately, what we're preparing for and hoping to prepare for is a demonstration of what happens when we withhold our labor as well, the power that comes with that as well. So the call to action is to show up, to be loud, to join us, also have a little bit of fun as well while we're at it. But that's really it. But what this is a demonstration of how we're going to fight for our rights.
Excellent, excellent. Sebastian, who's coordinating this year's events? And what give us a sense of some of the organizations that are participating.
So the LA May Day Coalition is made up of over 90 community-based organizations, immigrants' rights groups, labor unions. And I'm really excited because it ranges the gamut, right? It ranges the gamut from statewide organizations like SCAU, United Service Workers West, which represents 50,000 workers across the state of California. But it also has a space and it creates a forum for smaller organizations that are more locally based as well to have their input and to say, you know what, I may not be the largest organization, you know, in California, but our organization and our members have a voice. We're going to bring these members and we're going to contribute whatever resources we have, because right now, fighting for our rights collectively, fighting for immigrants' rights and fighting for immigrant workers, that's the cause that we all need to undertake.
Well, all those groups behind you, do you expect it to be a pretty good turnout tomorrow?
We're expecting this action to be one of the largest in the country and also one of the largest that has happened in LA recently. We're expecting it to number in the several thousands. And I don't want to put a limit on it, because what we've seen in the past is workers or the organizers, you know, we say a number and by the end of it, we've seen people join the May Day parade or the May Day march over the course of the day, because there's so much enthusiasm and excitement that the numbers just keep swelling. But several thousand for sure. We're expecting some street closures to happen, and you know, a little bit of some good trouble, as other people might say.
Good.
Jim knows all about that. So let's go to Erica. I understand there's going to be a lot of activities around town. I'm super excited. So let's start with the march that you've both been working on. When and where will it start? Is there anything special listeners need to do to join? Any other advice or information we need to know about how to get involved?
Yeah, there's no registration. People just show up, right? Feel passionate and show up. We do ask everyone to start showing up closer to 9 a.m. and be prepared for immediate rallies, chants, calls to action. This year, we implemented a culture committee that put together a good set of performers at the beginning that are rooted in the community. You know, we have a American folk music band by the name of the Chainbreakers, who is going to be playing traditional revolutionary folk music. We're going to have a show by a drag theater group. And Somos Familia Valle, I believe, is their name. And they're going to put something together to represent the LGBTQ community, LGBTQ+. We're also going to be doing some land acknowledgements, a blessing, and get onto the speakers this year. We ask people to really harness the power of public transportation, right? Especially because, like Sebastian said, we expect good trouble. We are definitely purposefully choosing Olympic and Figueroa as the meeting place. You know, it's no secret that that place is historical for shutting down streets for the Grammys or for things that are typical of people that are not everyday working people. And so our goal is to bring that attention to that. And we're going to end at the federal building, you know, the detention center. And that is for a purpose. We want them to see that we are a huge number of people and that we are not going to be moved. And at the end, we're going to have another performance by some of the same groups that were at the beginning, but we're going to also add two more. And then at the end, Los Jornaleros del Norte, they're going to close us out. In terms of speakers, we're pretty stacked. We're going to have Angelica Salas, who's the director, executive director of Chirlas, who's going to speak, Yvonne Wheeler with the LA Federation. You know, we're going to have folks from SEIU, UTLA, USWW, the Filipino Workers Center. We're going to have COCO speak, UCLA Labor Center. I mean, it is going to be stacked. Mm-hmm. And these people are powerful voices in the movement. And in particular, the labor movement right now, given what's going on with SEIU 721 and just the need to uphold, you know, fair labor practices and stuff like that and resist as much as we can. That's a lot, but we're there for it, right? We signed up for this. This is what we want to do. So we're there for it. That's the goal.
No, it sounds terrific. It sounds absolutely terrific. And it couldn't come at a better time, what with the striking workers and what have you, and perhaps more on the way. So it's by showing up tomorrow, folks, you'll not only see a hell of a performance from a lot of great musicians, you'll hear a lot of powerful and informative speakers from a lot of people in the labor movement and beyond, the immigration movement and beyond. And by showing up, you're part of their support. The more that are there, the larger the support is, the more the companies which look on, the more the government looks on, realizes that, don't mess with LA, folks. This is one powerful unit. You know, they're getting ready because we're a sanctuary state and what have you. They're getting ready to supposedly take harsher measures on sanctuaries and entities and places and states and what have you. We're not afraid of that here. We've been proud of our status in that regard for some time. But the showing up in great numbers is what will send a message to Trump and to the vigilantes that work for him that coming to LA isn't going to win you any favors, that we're here prepared to defend our ground. So thank you very much for all those who are organizing it and to all of our listeners who show up.
Yes, Jim.
Yeah, sure. No. I think it's there's more information that perhaps people need, of course. You mentioned where it starts and where it ends. If people want to find out more information about exactly where to show up at what time and maybe where to park, and all that good stuff. Sebastian, where do they go to find out that information?
So I would encourage folks to check out any sort of social media that either SEIU, USWW has, organizations like SBCC, like Erica's, that have been promoting this. Chirla as well has a lot of resources, a lot of information, because it's going to be a lot, right? It's going to not be business as usual in downtown Los Angeles and throughout Los Angeles tomorrow. Because right now the stakes couldn't be higher. So encourage folks to go to, again, Chirla, your local union, if you're a union member whose union is endorsing this action, your organization like Strength-Based Community Change, if you're a member of those community-based organizations. But as Erica was saying, we're meeting at West Olympic and South Figueroa and we're marching through downtown. So be there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I did want to throw out a question to both of you, which is, you know, maybe for first, it may be obvious, but I think you may have some additional insight as you've been working together with this amazing coalition. Why is it more important than ever to participate in May Day activities this year for listeners? You know, why is it empowering? Why do you find it empowering to actually get out, even if you feel a little bit afraid? Erica.
I guess I'll go first. You know, at the beginning of the year, it was all doom and gloom. And then you go and you look at the community that you serve, you look at the people around you, and you realize we're worth fighting for, you know? And one of our members of the coalition, his name is Cliff, and he's very vocal, and I love it. And he's always bringing it back to the table. And we may have detailed conversations about why we need to pick certain themes, but at the end of the day, he's always there to tell us, like, hey, the bottom line is we're tipping towards a fascist America. We are needing to educate people more often, and if we give a little bit, we're essentially giving away everything. And the need to stand in solidarity, whether you belong to a union or not, it is now everyone, every single person in this country, you know, and even other countries have a reason to stand up, because this is dangerous ground that we're walking on right now. And we need to be able to know that, you know, at the higher level, there's other things that come to play, but the people that bear the brunt of these impacts are our communities, our workers. And so it's a tough question to answer because there's so much and everyone has a reason to be out there. And it's so much more significant than ever. I think Sebastian might feel the same way.
I absolutely do. And there's, I don't want to take too much away from what Erica was saying. I would just add there that the stakes couldn't be higher, right? The stakes couldn't be greater as in terms of what working people, what we're all confronting, right? And right now, more than ever, it's important to unite, to build power, to build that solidarity across difference, and most importantly, to build power across difference. And this is one of those examples of what people can do, right? So many people are saying, well, what can I do? What can I do? Where do I go? I want to get involved. I want to raise my voice. This is it. This is, well, this is the only opportunity, right? But on May 1st, this is what you can do, because this this is the continuation of our activism, of longstanding activism. And as Jim was saying, right, California doesn't take the sitting down. We're gonna be fighting back, and this is just another chance for us to demonstrate that Californians are united against hate, that we're united against fascism, but also that we're united for workers' rights, for immigrant rights, for all of our rights.
Yeah, you know. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Erica.
I wanted to add one more thing, and I think Sebastian, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we're going to stop here. I think us as a coalition have made it a commitment that this is just the start, and that this shouldn't be the end. That we meet for the march, and then that's it. I think our goal as a coalition moving forward is to continue to stay engaged and support each other in action, in helping uplift people and doing what we can to support our communities across LA County. And if that means, you know, hey, there's something going on in the neighboring county and how we can provide lessons learned to them as well. It's all the support. We're seeing it here for this coalition, but for other movements too. And it's not a surprise that, you know, tomorrow there's going to be over 1,000 movements across the country, according to the 50-50-01 movement as well. So people have a right to be upset and to move. I mean, that's our First Amendment. Air our grievances, for God's sakes.
Well, yeah, and what is more sacred to the union movement in this country than the notion that an attack on one is an attack on all? And so what you say, Erica, about other counties and what have you, and other causes, and that's why the joining together of all these causes, there's strength in numbers. Look what happened years ago when the Sensenbrenner bill was before the Congress, which was going to really do in immigrants in this country. A million immigrants and their supporters got on the streets in L.A., and that and a lot of other work beat that bill back so it never passed. It can be done. And now more than ever, we need that kind of unity and that kind of power in the streets to say no to Trump, who's driving that car down the road to fascists. We need to get that damn car off the road. And these are the kinds of ways in which you do it. Well, any last thoughts, Sebastian, before we move along?
The only thing I say is that, and I think your audience knows this well, but I think it's always worth repeating that when we stand up for our own rights and you stand up for the rights of your neighbor, of your immigrant neighbor, you're standing up for your own rights, because the more rights that everyone has, the more rights we all have. And so this is a chance for us to go out there, to show our power, to lift up our voices, and to say, to uplift a worker's struggle that we need to be doing every day, but tomorrow is a special day to do that.
Well, my goodness. So thank you so much, Erica, and thank you, Sebastian. SEIU in the House, SBCC in the House. Tomorrow there are going to be tens of thousands of people, not in the House, but on the streets where they belong. It's May Day, folks. Be a part of it. Be a part of it. Don't miss it. You'll feel a lot better. You'll be vitalized by it. You'll be re-energized by it. That always happens to me when I go to a demonstration. Sometimes, you know, you're feeling down. You read the newspaper. You listen to the news. By God, what could we do? What could we do? And then you go and you meet with your brothers and sisters. You hear their stories. You see the power of people in motion. You go home, you feel better. Now you go to work the next day. There's an organizing effort going on. Well, yeah, oh, God, I was just in a demonstration yesterday. I see how that works. that makes sense. That can work. I'm part of it now. So it really does have a cumulative effect that it's not the right word I wanted, snowball effect. You start getting inspired, you start doing better and stronger work.
Well, and Jim, that, yeah. Jim, let me ask you, how many protests have you been to?
Oh, my God. You know, I was in the house of somebody the other day who has a playbill up. You know, when you go to the theater, you get a playbill from something like, I think it was close to 2,000 playbills. 2,000 different plays he'd been to. I was thinking, if only I'd kept a flyer from all the demonstrations I've been at, I could, you know, I could patch my ceiling up with it. I could cover a whole wall with it. It would be great. Great to have those memories. But I'll tell you, there's never been one that I've been at that I've regretted after that I was at. I was always thrilled and better person and felt better and felt stronger and more secure myself having been at those protests.
Yeah, easily thousands. I'm sure I've been to I've easily thousands that you've been to. I've probably been to a couple hundred with you.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. All right. Well,
and that's how you stay so fit.
Yeah.
Stay
yeah.
healthy. Stay healthy.
Keep healthy. Keep moving along, my friends. Yeah. Well, let's use this. Let's say goodbye to these good people. Let's use the last couple of minutes before our station break to do a little piece of business. We do have to do a little piece of business. We say we don't spend much time now on our fund drives doing fund drive stuff on each show. But and that has not worked to our advantage, my friends, as you can imagine. You know, when you're on listening to these shows and they go on forever and ever and ever about how you should give them a call, they do better. We used to do better when we did it that way. But on the other hand, there's so much going on in the world now. This is such, as Eric and others have put it earlier, such a unique time in the world, the most dangerous time any of us have experienced in our lifetime, that we felt that we should really cut that way back, spend most of our fund drive time on the air, doing what we've been doing today and we'll continue doing in our next half hour, that is talking program, having our guests talk about what they're doing, what these fight back efforts are all about. But we do want to remind you that you need to give us a call. Say you appreciate that at 818-985-5735. You choose option 2 when you get on the phone and make your pledge. And there's all sorts of ways we say thank you. You heard reference to a book. We're going to be talking more about that book with the author of that book in a few minutes. That's one of the ways we say thank you today. But there are... albums and movies and tote bags and T-shirts and cups. There's just a million different ways we say thank you to you. We like to think that the program itself might be thanks enough, but we go beyond that. So if you're listening, if you're driving or if you're home and you're listening, you must like something we do here. We're sure pleased to hear that. And we'd like to ask you to say, hey, thanks, by sending in a few bucks. And you do that by going to our website at kpfk.org or by giving us a call at the 818-985-5735 number option 2. What are you going to pick up, my friend Maria Hall? You got your eye on another cup or a T-shirt?
Actually, a book. We were so lucky.
Oh, yes, right.
New Press Publishing Company has generously donated copies of the book, and the author is coming up in the next segment. The book is called Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News. And that's written by our next guest, Alec Karakatsanis. And that's if you pledge $100 or more to KPFK, we'll send you Copaganda as a thank you gift. So go ahead and jump on kpfk.org while you're listening. And yeah.
And doesn't that book talk in particular about L.A. as well?
It does. It has a lot about L.A., Stop LAPD Spying Coalition and the great work they've done. And yeah, to counter some of the LAPD and L.A. County Sheriff, their propaganda machines.
Yeah, we know that the press in this country, the corporate press in this country, unlike public radio stations, hopefully, certainly unlike this public radio station, often slants the news in favor of the corporations they really represent. We understand that. We don't always think of it, though, as including when they're reporting on their crime report. You know, they love to give a crime report in the news at night. They love to report about crime in the newspaper because people are fascinated with crime. In fact, they often make it seem as though there's nothing but crime going on when, in fact, crime is down. And so the press plays a big role in how we see the crime that's in our community, how much crime, how a particular crime, perhaps one of high profile, is covered, how that affects perhaps the outcome of the trial, how that affects public perception. It's something we all sort of intuitively we may understand, but if you stay tuned, you're going to learn more details about how it actually is accomplished and see how it is at work and what we can do to guard ourselves against the undue influence of it. So let's take our station ID break right now. While that's going on, it'll be a short break, but time enough for you to call us at 818-985-5735, option 2, or go on our website, kpfk.org, and we'll be right back with you after this station ID break.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support KPFK. One of the best ways you can do it is simply by becoming a sustainer, pledging $10 or more each month. In that way, you help to protect this independent radio station. And sign up today.
You can join KPFK's sustainer program by logging on to kpfk.org.
And there's that music playing again. You're still listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm still Jim Lafferty. Maria, you're still Maria Hall, aren't you?
I am indeed.
We're still co-hosting the show and so thrilled to have you listening to us today. Maria, remind our folks about what we're going to be talking about now. And in fact, you might as well just go ahead and introduce the next topic. While that's going on, folks, you can give us a call at that 818-985-5735 number. Or go on to the website. You won't miss too much. Do that, get that out of the way. And by the time you're done with that, you'll be ready for our guest, which we're in the process of setting up an introduction to. So you've got a minute or two. But go ahead, Maria.
Yes. Well, our guest on this segment is Alec Karakatsanis. And because he does have a really crazy book tour schedule right now, we caught up with him a little bit earlier.
Oh.
We have a recording that we're going to jump right into, and then Jim and I will be right here to talk to you at the end of it.
All right.
All right.
Truth matters. Even when powerful forces try to bury it under bureaucracy, spectacle, and fear. One of the most challenging truths to uncover concerns law enforcement and our country's criminal legal system. This segment, we'll be speaking with Alec Karakatsanis, an award-winning lawyer and author of a new book called Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News, which was released this month from the New Press. The book tells a hard truth, and that is that the stories we hear about crime and safety are rarely what they seem. In a nutshell, the police tell the story first, the press repeats it, the public gets scared. The public then votes for more jails, more police, and harsher punishments. And yet, no one really feels safer. Well, that's because sensational headlines, fear-driven narratives, and silence around poverty and state violence are not designed to make us feel safe, but rather designed to control us and, of course, justify higher budgets and intrusions into our privacy. Alec Karakatsanis is a civil rights lawyer, former public defender, and founder of Civil Rights Corps in Washington, D.C. He's long been a powerful critic of mass incarceration and the criminal legal system. His latest book pulls back the curtain on an often overlooked element of that system, the media. Alec Karakatsanis, welcome to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, the title of your book is Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News. So what exactly is copaganda and how can listeners recognize it when they see it?
For me, copaganda has really three main functions. The first is it narrows our conception of safety, narrows our conception of threat. So copaganda has us concerned and worried and fearful about poor people. People of color, particularly Black people, immigrants, and strangers. instead of worried about far greater harms in our society that are caused by people in power and wealthy people. So at a very basic level, you might see news stories about retail theft or carjacking or robbery, but never see stories about wage theft, which is a $50 billion a year problem where employers take money from low-wage workers, or tax evasion, $1 trillion a year. That's 60 times all property crime combined. Wage theft is about 5 times all police-reported property crime combined. You also just don't see a lot of news stories about water pollution crimes or air pollution. You know, air pollution kills about 100,000 people in the U.S. every year, so that's about 5 times all homicide combined. And yet you don't see on the nightly news story after story after story. We're not getting push alerts from the New York Times to our phones about the latest dumping of chemicals into the water or air pollution. And so our conception of the greatest threats to our well-being and to the well-being of our families and our communities and the plants and animals around us is really distorted by what's covered in the news. And the second major function of propaganda is having narrower conception of safety. It's constantly wanting us to be more and more and more afraid of that narrow range of harms and that narrow range of people, mostly vulnerable people, who it portrays as causing those harms. And so if you look at public policy polling over the last 25 years, for example, every single year people think crime is up, whereas almost every single year in that period, crime was down. And one interesting thing about that polling is when you ask people about crime in their own neighborhoods, they're much more likely to be accurate. So when their perception is based on their own experience, they're much more likely to say, well, crime in my neighborhood is not up. But when they are asked about generally, they're saying, oh, well, crime everywhere else is. And that's because it's filtered through the mass media. It's constantly telling them that crime is up, 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 up. And the narrow range of crimes that police focus on. And that's the really important segue into the third really important feature of propaganda for me, which is having made us really scared of this small range of things, it tells us that the only solution to our fears is more money for police prosecution in prisons, more state repression, more state violence, more surveillance, more control, rather than what the evidence shows actually makes us safer: investments in reducing inequality and poverty, housing, healthcare, early childhood education, programs to combat loneliness and isolation, theater, music, art programs for young people, streetlights, lead abatement. These are the things that the evidence actually shows affect levels of violence in our society, not like whether the sentence is 6 years or 10 years, or whether the police have a slightly different modified patrol strategy, or whether the prosecution's charging policies are a little bit too lenient compared to the last prosecutor. All of that stuff has no effect on significant levels of violence in our society. But propaganda is constantly telling us that it does.
Well, speaking of looking at things from our own experience, can you give us a couple examples of how your work as a public defender and civil rights lawyer opened your eyes to propaganda?
All over the country where we would go, we would be representing some of the most targeted and vulnerable people in our society. And every time we would win a major case, like against police brutality or striking down the money bail system, there would be this sort of rush to promote as a solution to that problem a sort of a different but more expensive investment in the punishment bureaucracy. You know, so the solution to police violence is more surveillance equipment and body cameras for the police. I have a whole section in the book on the sort of unknown history and the propagandistic history of body cameras and the media coverage of body cameras, essentially part of a long pattern of police using their own violence to get more and more money for training and technology, which they then use to surveil and crush the poorest people in our society at greater levels. Secondly, like on, let's say, bail reform, the solution becomes not releasing more people from jail, but trying to jail more people with different labels. You know, instead of jailing people because they can't pay a money bail, now the same companies are going to be selling electronic monitoring devices, and the government is going to be detaining you because it labels you a risk to public safety or something like that. So preserving a lot of the same architecture of oppression under new labels is something that I started seeing a lot of, and I started wondering sort of how is it that these systems are so resilient that even when they're caught doing really illegal and unlawful and harmful and and catastrophic even things to our society, they continually get more and more and more investment. The solution is always doubling down on those strategies as opposed to fixing the root causes of harm. And so I started studying it and I started asking questions like, what are the narratives that the police and the punishment bureaucracy and the news media is telling the population to get it to go along with policies that are actually making the things that people care about worse?
Well, Alec, let's narrow in on Los Angeles. Your book, Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News, showcases examples of copaganda right here in LA. Please talk about some of the things you discovered.
Los Angeles is a very interesting case. The Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has about 42 full-time public relations officers. The LAPD has another 25. So if you just take the first two largest police offices in Los Angeles, that's 67 full-time public relations officials. We're not even counting DA, mayor's office people, private consultants for the policing public relations industry, or any of the other dozens of police departments all around the region. So you have to understand, when you see any story in the local news in Los Angeles, there's a bustling world underneath it. And you always have to ask yourself a question, like, how did this story become news? Out of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of things that are happening in the Los Angeles area on any given night, any given afternoon, how did the reporter get this story? Who are the sources that came to the reporter? How did those sources get there? What are the sources offering as their framing of the problem and the solution of the story? What language are they using, right? And so I examined a bunch of stuff from Los Angeles and a number of stories, including stories about the election surrounding George Gascón, the prosecutor, the right-wing push to recall him, and then the campaign to replace him. I looked at like the sort of retail theft coverage of the Los Angeles Times and KTLA and other stations. I looked at all of the ways in which local media was fomenting a crime panic in Los Angeles at a time when crime in Los Angeles was at historic lows. And this is a really, really important thing to understand about the way crime coverage works. And I call it the selective curation of anecdote. So if you ask me to explain to someone who's never watched the Los Angeles Lakers, like, is LeBron James a good basketball player? Or is Luka Doncic a good shooter or something like that? I could make a video of every missed shot in LeBron's career, every turnover, and every missed shot in Doncic's career. It would be hours and hours and hours long. And you might conclude, if you've never seen them play, that these are actually really bad basketball players. These are people who are maybe among the worst basketball players in NBA history. All they do is miss shots. That's because I'm excluding all the really good plays and all the things that they did on the court that actually helped their team win, right? So that's essentially what the news media does with retail theft or crime coverage generally. It's picking little anecdotes and it's using true anecdotes to create a false impression, like crime is rising or crime is connected to policing strategies. One of the most important aspects of propaganda that I learned as I studied sort of scholars and historical examples and modern coverage is that the very best and most effective propaganda is based on true facts. It's taking true facts and using them to create a false impression or a false narrative. If you use untrue facts, it's kind of easy if the person can show that, like, well, actually that video you showed me didn't happen, then you lose credibility, right? But if you can do something more sophisticated and you can use true facts to create a false impression, you've actually now really enhanced your capability as a propagandist. And that's, broadly speaking, what's happened in Los Angeles over the last few years. People have been led to believe that crime is rising, that it's connected to various policies, like the policies of the progressive district attorney or something, which have no empirical connection whatsoever to levels of violence in Los Angeles.
Well, thank you for that. And because tomorrow is May Day, and speaking of protests and rallies and marches, can you spend just a minute talking also about how the media covers protests?
The media and police have a really important role to play in shaping how we see protest, right? So if there's an interest, the media can cover any given protest, and portray it as chaotic and violent or peaceful, or, you know, if there's a counter protest, the media can tell a different narrative about who instigated the violence, or another thing that the media does a lot with protests is it covers like certain unimportant details of the protest without covering the underlying issues that people are protesting, which it often does if the underlying issues are things that people in power in our society don't want us talking about. And so there's all these different ways the media can sort of subtly manipulate what we think about a group of protesters or a single protester, or even use the fact of protesting, but like in a way that kind of ignores the underlying issues that are being protested, to kind of distort our perception of what other people in our society think of issues.
So, Alec, here on the Lawyers Guild show, we've often had on guests from the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. And I understand you're donating royalties from your book to the coalition. What motivated you to do that?
Stop LAPD Spying Coalition is one of the most important local groups that I've ever encountered in my 15 years as a civil rights lawyer. They do incredible work with the unhoused community in Skid Row, and really beautiful community-based scholarship and organizing around police surveillance technology generally. And so all of the royalties from the book are being donated to the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I don't make any money off the book. So when you get a book, you're supporting actually the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. And also, I've set up a nonprofit 501c3 charitable fund for the book so that there's free copies of the book available to any teacher in high school, college, graduate school, law school, and any person in prison who wants a copy of the book. So if you're connected to people in prison, if you're connected to students or teachers, you know, we want you to be able to have the ideas in the book for free. And if you can afford to purchase a copy, you also are still supporting the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition.
Amazing. Well, I understand you have a couple of speaking engagements here in LA tonight and tomorrow. Tell us about them.
Tonight, I'll be at Loyola Marymount University at 6 p.m. In Political Science Village. And on Thursday night, I'll be at Occidental College at 7 p.m. So come on out, bring friends, bring colleagues, bring relatives, bring people who have generally liberal views, but who've been heavily propagandized by the news media to support carceral policies that don't work. We'll have a really, I think, fun and interesting discussion.
Well, great. Do you have any last thoughts for our listeners?
I think the most important thing is to start thinking about how you and people in your lives can get together in this moment of rising authoritarianism and start thinking a little bit about how do we get involved in intervening in some of these mythologies and narratives. And I give a bunch of advice at the end of the book in chapter 16 about ways we can come together with people in our own community, whether it's other attorneys or teachers or nurses or doctors or directly impacted families, people who have got a tech background, whatever it is, there's ways you can get involved with each other in countering these narratives, in helping the news media by feeding them stories and building relationships with them so that they don't just like immediately repeat and publish and do news stories every night from the police blotter. We can help give them different kinds of content by coming together in our community and organizing to become sources for the news media. We're not going to get paid like the police, who have a multi-billion dollar industry around giving articles to the news, but we can do this on the side. We can be scrappy. We can change the nature of local news reporting by presenting these stories to the news media, which, you know, has been really divested from. And so a lot of what's going on and why these stories look the way they look is that the news media doesn't have the resources to do a lot of the sort of story collection and investigation itself. So we can do that for them. And it's a really, really, really important thing for us to remember.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And please, in closing, let us know where we can find your book, Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News.
You can buy the book anywhere books are sold. You can also buy it directly from the New Press, which is the nonprofit publisher. And if you use the code TNP30, you can get a 30% off of the book. So that's a really, really cool way to buy the book. And it'd be really wonderful if you bought the book and support Stop LAPD Spying Coalition and got a couple of copies for people in your life.
Civil rights lawyer and author Alec Karakatsanis, thank you so much for joining us today on the Lawyers Guild show.
Thank you so much for having me, Maria.
Well, that was terrific, Maria. Really a wonderful interview, and I'm glad you were able to catch him in his busy schedule. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Well, just in the few minutes we do have left, let's remind our listeners why it's important, if they want to keep this kind of radio going, to contribute now to that cause, which is to say, to become a member of KPFK. You could do that for as little as $25 a year. You can become a sustaining member. You can go on our website and learn all about that. You can make a donations of $25 or $25,000. We realize that's unlikely, but certainly maybe $500 is something you can afford to do. Make that kind of a contribution on behalf of the fact that some of your friends who are listening might be out of work right now and not be able to afford to do anything. We want them to continue to listen. We're not saying if you haven't paid us, you shouldn't listen or you can't listen. We understand what the situation is. On the other hand, if you do listen regularly, especially to the station, and it does seem to me that you might want to keep us on the air because you enjoy what you're hearing. You subscribe perhaps to a newspaper, you subscribe to one or more or 10 different streaming services on TV. And my God, we all know what we pay for those more and more and more. Make sure you keep us in the loop with you. Maria, I noticed I was looking over some of the notes for today's meeting. First of all, let's remind everybody about the fact that we have some of those books that have been donated by the press.
Yes, definitely. As we mentioned, you know, the book that Alec wrote called Copaganda, How the Police and the Media, I always get those backwards, but, you know, manipulate the news.
Yeah.
That is such a page turner. It's such a fun read. It's 400 pages, so I haven't finished it yet, but it does. It moves along, and it's just packed with statistics and really interesting stories. And I wanted to read a short excerpt because you can have a copy of the book for a pledge of $100. KPFK will send it to you as a thank you. And here's a short excerpt that both tells why you need to read this book, but also why it's so important to give to KPFK. It's, quote, "There is a never-ending battle to get news media to focus on particular stories and not others. Given who is funding and who stands to benefit from these choices in this war, it is not surprising that a bad thing is deemed worthy of high-volume coverage if poor people are doing it, especially if poor people are doing the bad thing to rich people, and if the poor people are not white. But when rich people are doing something bad to poor people, it's viewed as a niche story for boutique investigative pieces, not daily breaking news that the outlet must make sure everyone is aware of as a trend." So that is from the book, Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News, available. If you give a pledge for $100 or more, KPFK will send it to you as a thank you gift. And it's just jam-packed with such critical information.
Well, and that quote you just heard makes it important, so important to support independent media. Because if all that's left out there in the marketplace of ideas is what you see in the LA Times or any other corporate-owned newspaper, or what you hear on corporate-owned media on the air as you're driving in your car, you're hardly getting the whole story. You're not going to be hearing the kind of people that we play here week after week and other programmers do here day after day, hour after hour. And as we've said before, too, we understand that we're a part of the movement here. We're not shy about that. I mean, we make no bones about the fact that we're a station that believes in human rights and in justice and in humanity and getting along with itself. And that's what this station was and this network was founded on so many, many years ago. We're proud of that. We are an independent station. We don't get money from the federal government anyway. We don't we have very nothing really resembling the kind of sponsorships that you get, you know, this program brought to you by Archer Daniels Midland. Yeah, well, that affects what kind of programming you're going to hear on a station that's taking money from those folks. So you don't have that here. We get our money only from you. You're the sponsors of this radio station, the community that listens to this radio station. When you contribute to us, you're contributing, therefore, to the progressive cause. The progressive cause being what? To have free and true and balanced news, to have free speech means nothing if it isn't balanced. And it ain't free if only corporate media can whisper into your ear every day the lies and that they're often telling or the incomplete story they're often telling. I also want to remind everybody before we do have to leave you today that your support for the Lawyers Guild show comes in part from New Press, presenting Alex's new book that was mentioned, Copaganda, How Police and the Media Manipulate Our News. More information on that is available at thenewpress.org. And you certainly should check that out in terms of that book. But you should check out our website, Maria, because what? They have a few ways to say thank you, don't we?
Yes, yes. In addition to that book, Copaganda, for a $100 donation, thank you gift, there are, oh my gosh, so many CDs, so much great music. I did go ahead and get the Ink Spots. Is
one. Oh, yes.
50 beautiful songs that take you back to an era when FDR was president. So you can just, you know, close your eyes and listen and pretend.
Pretend it was the New Deal and all that.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, you definitely don't. I mean, even $5, you can get a bumper sticker. You know, it's just mainly giving because you want to be part of it and because you support and that we know that you support. We can't see you listening. So we get encouragement if we know that you're listening and that you appreciate it.
Yeah. And we do check after all. We want to know how our programming is doing. We want to know how the station is doing. We want to know how the fund drive is doing. And so we bothered to check and see how many of you did bother to give us a call during the Lawyers Guild show because we know you're listening. And so we do that. We so appreciate when we do hear from you. We used to do it in a way where we could read your name on the air. We don't have that ability right now because of the way we're having to broadcast. That'll return someday. But in the meanwhile, whether we can acknowledge you directly or not, know that we go over all the pledges that do come in. We see your pledges. We are thrilled when we get a pledge from you of whatever the amount may be. So please call us at 818-985-5735. Choose option 2. There'll be somebody there who will take your pitch, take the information down from what you want to get by way of a thank you gift. Some people take nothing at all. They simply make the contribution and they say, hey, your program is thankful as thanks enough. Whatever may be the case, we're happy. These sponsors give us this merchandise that we can then pass on to you. And we're thrilled to be able to do that. And
yeah,
maybe use it to help propagandize, rob people in your church or in your union hall or at your school. A lot of teachers will sometimes go online and see a particular video or a particular book that they know it's hard to get and they could use to really improve what they're teaching by way of their curriculum in school. So we're very much a part of life here in LA, a part of the progressive life here in LA. When you contribute to us, you're contributing to all that at 818-985-5735, option 2. And now you might note now that we're just about out of time. We have a minute, perhaps less. In fact, I think, do I hear our music playing? D'Angelo, let me know how much time we do have left, or let me hear the music. Either way, again, we're in a situation now where that's quite so easy to keep track of all that. But it's more important that you dial the phone. That's it. That's our music playing right now. While that music is playing, my friends, it's a great time to dial. You're missing nothing, but you're helping us. 818-985-5735. Until next week, at the same time, we thank all of you who did contribute already. Those of you that we know are going to contribute, Maria Hall and I, Jim Lafferty, thank you for listening. We'll be back with you again next week. Until then, my friends, stay healthy, stay safe, make sure you stand up for your rights.
I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. After an unprecedented start to the year with the Los Angeles fires, Governor Gavin Newsom proclaimed a state of emergency to fast-track critical projects protecting communities from wildfire ahead of the peak fire season.
Después de un comienzo de años sin precedentes con los incendios de Los Ángeles, el gobernador Gavin Newsom proclamó un estado de emergencia para acelerar los proyectos críticos para proteger a las comunidades de los incendios forestales y ha lanzado una campaña de preparación.
Cal Fire urges all state residents to protect their homes and communities. To make it easier, it offers an online tool where residents can create a preparedness plan, find safety tips, alerts, as well as real-time wildfire and evacuation updates. The tool can be found at readyforwildfire.org.
Cal Fire insta a todos los residentes del estado a proteger sus hogares y sus comunidades. Para que la preparación sea más fácil, ofrece una herramienta en línea donde los residentes pueden crear un plan de preparación, encontrar consejos de seguridad, alertas, así como actualizar